welcome to this episode of the Chamberlain's Lawcast on this most magnificent of days on the 18th of September 2019. This is the first part in a two-part series in relation to voluntary administration and a guide for creditors. With me today is our Managing Director at Chamberlain's, Mr. Stipe Valletta. Without further ado, let's get into it. Hi Stipe, thanks for being here. How are you?
Oh, great. Hugh, how are you travelling?
I'm travelling very, very well, thank you. So today we've got a fun topic and really almost a pet topic for you, being voluntary administration and a guide to creditors. I guess the first question I have for you today is, who is a creditor that would be interested in knowing more about voluntary administration?
Look, Hugh, it's pretty straightforward. Anyone that's owed money by a company should become acquainted with the voluntary administration process. So anyone from a trade creditor or a supplier who might have an unpaid account to even a customer who might have part paid for goods, or even those who have, you know, unused gift cards, for example.
That's very interesting. So just about anyone, really, that a company owes money to. That's amazing. So I guess, what is the purpose of a voluntary administration? What does it all mean?
Look, voluntary administration has been around for almost 30 years in Australia, and it's simply a process which allows an independent person to be appointed to the affairs of a company to investigate the affairs of that company to determine what its financial position is and to make some recommendations to creditors about the future of that company. Will it continue to operate in its current form? Will it be restructured? Will a proposal to creditors be put? Will there be a compromise? Or, you know, is it too late and will it go into liquidation?
And who is this person that investigates all the affairs and makes these decisions?
So the person that does all these investigations is just called an administrator. They tend to be someone who's qualified as a liquidator under the Corporations Act and is registered with ASIC. And they've got a lot of qualification and independence requirements, but ultimately they're just a fancy accountant and forensic auditor who goes in with their team to determine what's going on with the company and just to see, you know, what can be done.
Okay, and how does a creditor deal with this administrator? Is it a matter of the administrator approaching the creditor, or does the creditor approach the administrator? Are they scary?
Well, look, I can say that most voluntary administrators are not scary people. They are, you know, at heart accountants, but probably rather than talking about the appointees themselves, it's probably easier to talk about the voluntary administration process.
Absolutely.
Itself. So it starts with the appointment of an administrator. So a decision to appoint a voluntary administrator for a company can be made by the directors of that company, by a resolution of the board and in writing, or a secured creditor with a security interest in all or substantially all of the company's property. So, for example, a bank which might have a security over the various assets of the company.
Yep.
Or a liquidator or provisional liquidator. And we can get into that a bit later. But ultimately, if a company is already in liquidation, it can still rely on the voluntary administration process to look back at its affairs and say, well, maybe there's something we can do. Maybe we can approach the creditors and do a deal. So after the administrator's appointed, there's a first meeting.
Yeah.
And at that first meeting, it's pretty straightforward. They just have a simple vote to determine whether the creditors want to replace the administrator, whether they think the appointment is kosher, if I can put it that way.
Sure.
And whether some administrative processes need to be put in place to assist the creditors and the administrator to interact. So that's usually called a committee of inspection. So you can imagine with a smaller company, it's pretty straightforward. You don't need a subgroup of creditors to be involved. You can just get all the creditors in the room every time you have a meeting and you can put things to a vote, and that's normally manageable. But if you have a very, very large or complex administration of a larger company or a group of companies, then it might be useful to appoint some creditor representatives.
Yes.
To actually sit on smaller committees to assist the administrator go through the process of making administrative and financial decisions about the affairs of that company during administration.
And would those people on those smaller committees be people approved by certain creditors or creditors as a whole?
Commonly, a committee of inspection is voted upon by the whole creditor pool.
Okay.
So what would happen is an administrator is appointed to the company and they quickly look through the books and records and they write to everyone they possibly can think of and anyone noted in the books and records of the company and say, hey, are you a creditor? Do you want to show up to this first meeting? Do you want to make sure that I'm a good guy and that I'm validly appointed? Do you want to appoint your own administrator at this meeting? And do you think this is complicated enough to install a committee of inspection to assist us to get through all these processes in a more timely fashion? But what I can say is in the average matter,
yes,
committee of inspections aren't used. You know, commonly voluntary administration is used for SME companies where there's only a handful of creditors. So it's easy enough for all those creditors to just show up in person or by phone even,
yes,
and just have a chat.
That makes sense. So let's say that we're talking about your standard voluntary administration. You have the first meeting of creditors, everything goes well, all the creditors are happy with the administrator and the proposed plan. What happens next?
Look, the voluntary administrator then has to go in and start really investigating the affairs of the company. So that might involve looking at all the books and records. That might involve engaging with creditors who have relationships with the company. That might involve looking at other relationships that the company might have. So it might have ongoing contracts with parties who are not owed money, but it might have ongoing obligations. It might be continuing to trade. And just generally getting a bead on what the company is doing. At this point, the administrator would also determine whether the company's affairs are promising enough for them to continue to trade the company and to continue to take on liabilities in the expectation of future profit, or whether they're going to shut it down to mitigate risk and stop the bleeding. And that's really, I guess, a company-to-company thing.
Yes.
Basically, they just go ahead and they do that for a couple of weeks and they prepare a detailed report and they issue that report to all the creditors. And that report is commonly called the Section 439A report. And additionally to summarising all the various investigations that they've done, it will make a recommendation to creditors about three things.
Yes.
Will the company go into liquidation? So is it too late for the company? Is there no saving it?
Yep.
Will the company be returned to the directors as a solvent company? So basically, we jumped the gun. There was no need to go into voluntary administration. Or will there be a deal struck as the third option with creditors through what's called a deed of company arrangement?
Yes, this term gets thrown around quite a bit in these administrations. So are you able to tell us a bit more about deeds of company arrangements and generally how they work?
Yeah, look, a deed of company arrangement is pretty straightforward sort of thing. It's just a contract between the administrator, the company, and all of its creditors. Rather than being signed by all the creditors, it actually comes into force by way of law at the second meeting.
Okay.
And so we'll get to the second meeting shortly, but the deed can really say anything. The deed can say, you know, we're going to restructure the company by doing X, Y, and Z. The deed can say that we're going to sell the business of the company and use the proceeds of sale to fund a pool for creditors. The deed can actually say we're going to do nothing for a while and we're just going to continue investigating. But all of this is voted on in the context of the information provided in that Section 439A report at a second meeting of creditors.
Okay, that makes sense. Is there any stage where a court may review the DOCA or may comment on any DOCA proposal that's put to the creditors?
Yeah, look, so yes, after a second meeting of creditors, there's a process for the court to intervene, either at the request of creditors or the request of the administrator themselves, to basically have a look at the proposal and to decide whether it's kosher.
Yes.
There have been a number of cases recently which have established that as long as the intentions are there, the independence of the administrator is appropriate, and the deal struck doesn't breach any express exclusions under the Corporations Act, a deed can really say anything.
Okay.
So despite the fact that there are many cases where people ask for these deeds to be reviewed, it's more often the case that they usually proceed the way they do.
Yes.
So long as creditors are happy to vote in their favour. And I guess the real magic for creditors is what happens at that second meeting.
Yes, absolutely. So what does happen at that second meeting?
Look, the second meeting of creditors is used to deal with a number of issues. The first thing that is dealt with is the administrator's remuneration. So obviously administrators don't work for free.
Yeah.
They tend to work very, very hard for the 20 or 30 days that they're appointed, and they do a lot of investigation work. They do a lot of stakeholder engagement work. So the first thing that tends to happen is a conversation is had with creditors in the context of the Section 439A report about what that administrator should be paid. And if creditors are agreeable to what is proposed, then creditors can vote to approve an administrator's remuneration.
And in your experience, is that often an issue? Do creditors generally take issue at administrators' remuneration, or are they appreciative of the job that administrators do?
Look, I think as time's gone on, distrust for administrators and liquidators is unfortunately at an all-time high. There's a lot of scrutiny of the insolvency industry, and as someone who practices in this area, I think it's a regrettable social outcome. These are people that do a service for society that in many other places is actually done by regulators. So I think it's unfair that creditors are so critical of voluntary administrators,
but yes,
it is the case that often creditors, particularly those who are not necessarily very commonly engaged in the voluntary administration process, might see the proposed fees of an administrator and balk at it.
Yes.
Often these are people who, you know, in the day-to-day course of dealings they have in their businesses and their lives, don't see, you know, accounting and forensic services bills for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, even for a small matter.
Yes.
So it's not uncommon for creditors to engage in, I guess, lively banter at these second meetings about whether, you know, whether the fees are reasonable. But ultimately, in most cases, they tend to be approved.
Yes. And
as is a requirement under the law, administrators go to great depths to explain to creditors how they incur their fees, the exact work they do in doing their investigations, and why their fees are justified.
Yes, well, hopefully this podcast can raise some awareness in that regard, as you said, and remove the stigma to an extent if creditors expect to see fees and have that discussion before the matter proceeds to a second meeting of creditors. But moving forward from that, so the creditors generally vote at the second meeting on the administrators and their remuneration, and then what happens next generally?
Look, then the creditors consider those three questions that I raised earlier and the three pieces of advice that the administrator proposes to creditors in their Section 439A report.
Yes, and as a recap for our listeners, that's whether or not the company should go into liquidation. It's whether or not the company should be returned to a solvent trading entity, and whether or not a deed of company arrangement should be entered into. Is that correct?
That's correct to you.
Thank you.
Spot on.
Listening.
Great recap. But before they go into actually making a decision on all three of those things, they also can consider whether they want to adjourn the second meeting of creditors. And the reason why they might want to adjourn the second meeting of creditors is because despite the recommendations in the Section 439A report, some creditors or the administrators themselves may have a need to go back and do more investigations. People might need more clarifications, or there might be things such as trading opportunities for the company that are currently going on during the voluntary administration process, which might prove more favorable.
Yes.
If they're completed before a vote is done, or there might even be pending litigation which could be financially valuable for the company and in turn its creditors that people want to see out before they make a call as to the future of the company.
Absolutely, that makes sense.
But look, assuming they don't adjourn, assuming that there isn't a need to adjourn or a desire to adjourn, creditors would then consider the recommendation of the administrator. So for example, in a small business, there may not be any real opportunity to continue the trading of the company. The administrator may have already shut down the operating business of that company.
Yes.
And it may be important and self-evident to creditors that they really need the administrator to move into the liquidation phase, yes, where they go in and investigate any corporate misdeeds, any antecedent transactions, any dealings which might otherwise have a negative impact on the creditor pool.
Yes.
And to otherwise try to engage in proceedings to try to recover monies for the benefit of creditors. And in those circumstances, they would just simply vote to put the company into liquidation and the voluntary administration process would end.
Absolutely. Well, Stipe, I'm afraid I'm going to have to stop you there. Thank you so much for your time. As I said at the beginning of this podcast, this is part one of a two-part podcast for all creditors and giving our guide to voluntary administration to those creditors. So you will be joining me, I assume, on the next occasion. Stipe, thank you so much for being with us. And until next time, listeners, goodbye. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. As with all Chamberlain's Law Firm podcasts, the information that you have heard in this podcast is not legal advice and cannot be considered legal advice. If you have any questions or queries, please do not hesitate to contact our office on 02 6188 3600 or otherwise look us up on our website, which is www.chamberlains.com.au.